Cassidy shoves a gun up a bum. Jesus Christ is best friends with Tulip now, apparently. And is Jesse a god or just an idiot in a raft? Find out next when we're talking about Preacher, Season 4, Episode 4, Search and Rescue.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the AfterBuzz TV Preacher After Show.
Oh, yeah.
Sick tunes.
These tunes fit the show so well.
This is the genesis of tunes.
Oh, boy. They're commanding me to groove.
What up, guys? We're talking about Preacher, Season 4, Episode 4, Search and Rescue.
Ooh.
I'm your host, Elena Jordan, and I am not alone today.
No, you have been joined by me, Dave
My
Child.
My Child.
Hi,
My
everybody.
Dave Child.
Yep, okay. Dave Child's here. I'm ready to talk.
Yeah.
I just watched 3 hours of this show.
He just binged the crap out of this show. Props. To Dave.
My head is full of foreskin and Hitler and all sorts of terrible
things.
That's
why your skin looks so good.
So good.
It's the foreskin making your skin look so dewy.
So dewy. Dewy foreskin dewy. Love it. This is such a strange show to like.
It's so weird that this is a legitimate thing that we're talking about.
I know. And to mainline the show, like, makes you feel insane. Because it makes you, your reality gets warped. And there's so many different things going on. And it's so crazy. I just really like that this show is on the air.
The show is nuts. So kind of since you haven't been here.
Yeah.
What do you think, not only kind of overall thoughts, not only of this episode, but how it stacks up to the other three that we've seen thus far? Because we're four episodes in already. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I might mix up some of, like, everything's kind of in my head right now. But it's a good, the season's been really good. Like, I've been enjoying, I like the fact that this is the last season, even though I like the show. Because I like it when shows, like, know when to leave. Kind of know when to kind of quit and not keep going, even though they could easily keep going.
Know when to hold them.
Know when to fold them. And this one's doing a good job of revving up to the end and kind of like bringing stuff, especially from comic book like readers that are referenced all over the place. And kind of, and I like how they're just like, and here's the Jesus Desaad, and okay, bye, okay, let's keep going. And it's like, you guys happy? You guys, okay, cool, let's keep, and I love that. I kind of like how it's adapted into something different, and it's using what they've set up, and they're paying off on what they've set up, yet they're still being like, they're nodding towards the comic enough. It's good.
I think that is the pretty much the perfect encapsulation of this show.
Yeah.
Dave, it's so good to have
it's
you
so
back.
It's so good.
This show is absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
And kind of speaking, too, about the references to the comics, be sure to stick around for our whole episode.
Right.
Because at the end of the episode, not only will we be giving you guys our predictions for what we think will be happening for the rest of the season, wrapping up the series as a whole, but also our special segment where we will be talking about the similarities and differences and references to the Preacher 66-issue graphic novel.
Yeah.
Run. And again, that will be at the end, so if you're worried about spoilers, don't be. We thought about it. We saved them for the end for you guys. So diving right into this episode, man, kicking off, it picks up right where the end of episode one.
Yeah, we're kind of jumping around time. They're using time in a very interesting way. They're setting up stuff. This happened in the previous episode too, because you got to see him already on the plane, and then it jumps to him what actually happened at the Desaad place. And in this one, we're jumping right back into the meeting with Airstar and God.
Yeah, which is pretty cool, because we get not only, which we've seen in the last episode where we had some of the scene, enough of it where we almost were like, wait, did something just glitch out? Did something just happen? You know, when the middle of the episode. Whereas this one is having, okay, this is just a clip of what we saw at the end of the first episode of God saying, look, you don't just want to kill, you don't want him dead to rights. You want to make him suffer, so let's make him suffer.
You don't want to carve a vagina on his head. You want to carve a vagina into his soul. That's a new t-shirt.
I was about to say, that should be a t-shirt.
Vagina in the soul. Right? Everyone would love me if I'm walking around with that shirt. Oh, boy. But, like, one thing from that meeting that was really interesting is you found out that Humperdew is actually in God's plan.
Yes, and he's an integral part of God's plan. He's...
Yeah, and the Grail is actually working with God and not just something separate than God, which is new information.
And this, we also find out that this particular episode is an important one because the Grail is facilitating this big summit that has been foretold, and the Grail has all, and we'll talk about this a little later on when we talk about Tulip, but we get some exposition when she's talking to one of the Grail officers that this is the big summit between heaven and hell.
Yeah.
We see a little illusion of it when we see Hitler walk by and Frankie Toscani kind of crapping himself over like, oh, I should have gotten a picture with Evil Incarnate because he's here. So we find out that this summit is happening and that Hairstar is clearly going to be, because he is the Allfather, an important part of it, and he's given his packets and everything for it, which this, I have to say, the packet part, one of my favorite, because I actually kind of
paused it.
Yes, to look at each page.
Okay, because what was your favorite thing from the packet?
When there's a presentation packet. We only got the first.
Of course. Whenever I see a presentation packet,
like,
I just,
let me see this packet.
All reason falls away. I must see the packet.
So it's the steps for Apocalypse 2020, the end of the world. So we know that this is something that both sides are going to be working together to bring about the apocalypse, which also kind of goes with our whole circumventing of good and bad and what is the representation of, oh, well, clearly if the world is going to end, then these are evil forces that are doing this, but it's actually both of these.
Right. If there's one thing about a good apocalypse story, it's all about good and evil kind of coming together and doing it. Good Omens does the same sort of thing, where it's just about both sides kind of agreeing, well, the apocalypse has to happen, so let's come to terms about what's happening at the apocalypse.
Two sides of the same coin, and that coin is the apocalypse.
Is the apocalypse.
But yeah, so phase one is to infiltrate, place Grail loyalists in key government positions.
Right. And it seems like they've already done that, because we got a...
the meeting.
We have the meeting of what happens to the New Zealand.
Or they thought out of the box by thinking in the box.
In the box. I also love the little, like, in that meeting. I think it's a previous episode, but like I said, I just watched them all. The Blame Australia, which was like...
God, I know, so
made me think
good.
Of Flight of the Conchords, and it made New me Zealand. Really happy. Because they're always, like,
they're
going
always
up against...
Australia's like, where's the car? And we're like, where's the car?
Yeah. The arch nemesis of New Zealand is Australia. Love it.
Which we'll talk a little bit, too, about how Australia plays into this...
Whoa, and
plan.
Now Jesse is in Australia.
In Australia.
That can't be coincidental.
It's got to be some sort of connection.
Okay, I got a prediction that I'm going to bring up in
Boom.
The prediction
Especially
thing.
Because we put a shipping label on that dead body box.
Uh-huh.
So where's it going? Where's it going?
okay.
But we also, I love to seeing Hairstar... And his meeting with Jesus, too, and him talking about everything at Masada is at your disposal. The food court, the gym, the steam, the sauna. There's a chapel somewhere.
Somewhere.
They don't really know where the chapel is in this big holy sanctum because they've lost, I mean, these little subtle things that they throw in.
Seeing Jesus in this scenario is crazy. And it's just, and you see, get to see what his kind of energy goes, how it like conflicts with the rest of the show, because the show's so violent and crazy, and you see him just coming in as this like very soft boy and just trying to like use love and understanding to the and it's great. I like how Jesus seems like a swell guy.
The juxtaposition
nice guy.
Of like chill hippie Jesus and Hairstar, who is Hairstar is just losing it at this point. Yeah. I mean, Jesus even points out his ear and he's like, oh no, it's fine.
Why
and
did
we
he do
see
that
it
to his
fall
ear?
Onto the packet of the picture of Jesse, and Jesse is in the apocalypse packet.
Right, he's in the he's a big part of the apocalypse
a packet. A big part of the apocalypse packet. He has getting his own covered page. With ear dick.
Yeah, and ear dick.
Why we earmark did... it. He was earmarking the page.
Oh, gross.
I'm proud of that one, actually.
I know you are. And that's why I'm not proud of you. But it's I don't understand why Airstar decided, like, I'm going to replace my ear with vampire foreskin, unless he wanted to become a vampire.
But no, that I think he just was like, this will be something good to use in the meantime. I'm being so disfigured. It's just, it's stupid. I mean, he looks like a dickhead, and now he actually has a literal dickhead, and it's like very upsetting. But
and it doesn't look good, and why didn't he just say,
you lying to him and telling him. He's just very delusional. But we also see that that's what God is basically holding against him, right. Is he's saying, look, this is what you want. You want your
vestige,
prestige. You want, yeah, you want your good looks back. Mm-hmm. You want to not look like a dickhead and not be able to wear a hat. Like, I get it, man. So this is our plan. We're coming after Jesse. We're going to keep going after Jesse. And if you want to be beautiful, like then
the message this is what's of, up. The message of the show will always be God's an asshole. And that seems to be what they're building up.
And basically everybody is. Everybody, even Jesse, who is trying so hard this episode. And this is also kind of an interesting scene, too, when we first see Jesse and Steve in the boat. And we see, like, the crash.
Oh, Pilot Steve.
Poor Pilot Steve. But we saw this in the pre or on the next week on. Uh-huh. Was this exact scene, and we're like, wow, this seems like this is a big kind of spoiler that they're putting this in here, and it's the very first thing that we see. So it's like, okay, well, the only thing being, and I wanted your opinion on this, when the plane crashes, we see the old man, God, sitting on the plane, and the zoom in into the mouth. What did you think was going on with that?
Well, that was also happening when Jesse was kind of seeing his friends, had a moment with Cass, had a moment with Tulip, and then had a moment with God. So I don't think God was literally there. I think he was just imagining God laughing at him, and that was like personifying it. It was like showing it, because that's the same, you know, Cass wasn't there. Tulip wasn't there.
And I think that's why they showed those previous ones. Was to show, because we've seen God literally sitting there with Jesse, like, as a child.
Yeah, we saw, like, God and the Desaad, like, dressed up as the dog again.
But like, even when we see the young Jesse back in, when he's, you know, with his grandma, and we see the devil sitting at the table and God sitting in his bedroom, and they are supposedly literally in that moment.
Right.
I'm with you, though. I think that they set up those previous little kind of hallucination moments, or like imagining that somebody is there to show that this wasn't a literal adaptation.
And even if he was there or wasn't there, the same thing was happening, which was God was laughing at him and setting up these like series of disappointments in his life.
Oh my God, a lemony snicket's just like, series of unfortunate
events everywhere.
Everywhere.
Boy. Bad beginning all the way to the penultimate peril. I like those books. Little secret about me.
As do I.
Yeah. But in the, so you have like the kid, you have like first the dog dies and then the kid dies. And then like now you're set up. So now he's setting up this pilot that he's becoming friends with. And it was not showing. He was such a swell guy. He was the guy that wanted to go in and save the kid in the first place.
Yeah. Who's like, then, we got pilot code. If you don't have priest code, at least I have pilot code. I'm Pilot Steve.
Which, by the way, pilot code, not that strong.
Not.
Because he just went in and lost his pants somewhere, and that's what he focused on rather than actually finding that kid.
So, yeah, well, you know.
You know, pilots got to sow their oats, and that's what they tend to do. And but
he knew Jesse was on the way.
Yeah, and he was. You saw Jesse also use his voice more than he really ever has.
And we see kind of like the whole, like the, if... We've seen kind of the trope of if they have the capability to make a wish, but it's not phrased completely perfectly, then how that can go awry. And we're seeing that with Jesse, with him using his voice, with all of the examples, with the dog, with the kid, with everything where he's trying to do something good, and it's having unintended consequences that feel like God is just going, oh, well, you're going to do this? Okay, well, then this means this.
Yeah.
It just, it's all like a big chess game.
Yeah, and I think it was also building up to, specifically when they're on the raft, And, you know, he's already told him, like, be positive. That didn't turn out well because then he's not paying attention to the fact he's burning alive. And then, oh, don't feel pain. And then he loses his arm and has, and it builds up to the point where the pilot, Steve, is looking at Jesse and calling Jesse God. Mm-hmm. And he sees Jesse as God. And he just, and so he's asking Jesse for favors instead of God. And that makes me wonder if that's part of God's plan. If that's what God is really leading to, is to show you can see what it's like to be me because you're in this situation and someone's addressing you directly.
And that's a really good point.
Yeah, so it feels like it's building up
forced
to that.
Forced empathy almost.
Yeah, like you got
in the most douchey way possible.
Now you're now you know what it's like to be me because of, I've set up this horrible situation for you.
But I like that Jesse too in this moment is like, look, this is between me and you. Like, leave him out of here, out of it. Like you're he's gonna die out here if you keep pulling this bull crap. And Steve's like, well, what did God say? And then Jesse just trying to appease him. It's like, you haven't been abandoned. Don't worry. Like, he's still, the Custer in him is still wanting to give these assurances to this person, even though he doesn't know. And he's trying to use every bit of power that he has. And he's even given this opportunity when he's being told, like, oh, you said that this was all part of God's test. You're clearly God and you're testing me. I want this test to be over. Right. Please tell me that I pass. Just let me live. And then the word failing him ultimately.
Yeah, because I think he can't, like, you know.
He can't command somebody to live.
Yeah, and they can't will themselves to keep living, especially in that situation.
He needed to have some of that fight from that bisected grail girl, I'm telling you.
I also wonder, like, he should have just been like, go to heaven. Because it seems like he could say go to hell, and it seems to work.
Yeah.
So why can't he just be like, go to heaven, and then boom, he's up there, at the very least.
Yeah, that would have been, good call.
Yeah.
That would have been way better.
But then he would have also probably been a bloody stump, like burning, stuck in heaven, so he hadn't passed, like, you know. Left the body behind.
I did think that it was interesting that it too is the whole allegory of it being a pilot and it being the person who's taking him to his location. Right. And it's ultimately he loses his way.
We have to remember how this season started, which is him falling out of a plane
and
hitting the ground.
Dying.
Presumably dying. And so we, in the previous episodes.
And Cassie's hair also dying, but blonde.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we see in the previous episodes that a plane was kind of this, like, was always around. Where after he picked up the kid and got the, he saw a plane fly overhead and he followed the plane to the airport. And he's like, he sees that as kind of a destiny calling. So when he's on the plane, we even think, oh, is this the plane he's going to fall out of? And, like, that's how he's gonna, like, hit the ground? And that doesn't quite happen. The plane crashes, but he doesn't fall out of the plane.
And we know that it's in Australia because they gave us their title card. So then it's all coming back to this Australia moment. So it's so he's gonna go back in the air and fall out of a plane again?
He's gonna get back on a plane at some point. That's gonna happen.
But if you right don't now, fall out of a plane once, like Lost, get out of here, Ryan!
It's not Lost.
We've been talking about Lost too much.
Australia. It was a Flight 815 from
Yes, it was the flight.
You've lost your way, sir.
This is actually this, but God, this, unlike Lost, this is going to have a more satisfying ending.
Yes, 100%.
So.
You know what else is also really satisfying?
What?
How amazingly AfterBuzz has set up all of the categories and everything, so it makes it so easy for you guys to find your favorite shows.
As satisfying as a Diet Dr. Pepper.
Yeah, which is God's favorite drink.
God's favorite drink.
And I would assume his favorite after-show network would be AfterBuzz TV.
Yeah.
And if we're your favorite, let us know by giving us those 5 stars, the thumbs up, rate, subscribe, leave us some comments, talk to us, let us know what you think. We love hearing from you guys.
We love it.
It's why we do this show. If it wasn't for you, then we wouldn't be here binge-watching 3 hours straight of Preacher.
Ooh, I did it just to hear you, just to see your sweet tweets to me.
Sweet tweets.
Your sweet comments and your sweet stars. I love them.
Yes.
Makes me breathe. Back to the show.
So yeah, let us know what you think. Give us all of those good things, and then we'll keep talking about the show.
Yeah. Perfect segue.
Let that topic die, just like poor Steve in the raft.
Eaten by sharks, just a couple of just feet nibbled away from Australia.
Sharked. Oh my god, that was just the most ridiculous thing when he wraps up Steve and then he gives him this beautiful, moving Bible verse. He's saying these sweet, kind things, and then a boom, shark just comes up and 47 meters down just Mandy Moore's that poor Steve. And
spoiler alert, I haven't seen 47 meters down.
Well, what are you doing with your life? You haven't seen the cinematic classic 47 meters down?
I didn't even know Mandy Moore was in it.
They talk about a guy named Stewart. Oh, I thought it was Steve. Damn it. Never mind. It's not even good.
Sorry.
Never mind. Oh, well, I've seen it too much. I know the people they talk about. Ugh. Anyway. Anyway, so they turn around.
Very close to the beach, though. So if
son of a beach.
He could have just stayed alive just a little bit longer.
He could have scarred all of those children on the beach.
Most importantly. Yeah, that's
the takeaway is he could have. And also, like, there are some people just swimming out there. There are sharks very close to you guys. Get out of the water.
That's Australia, man.
Australia, everything's designed to kill you in Australia. But
they love sharks in Australia, and there's things on the land that'll kill you, and there's things in the sea.
I do love, though, that this is what finally breaks Jesse, though. He's finally like, you know what? You're an asshole. Like, I've been having this conversation with God. I've been saying, you know what? No, I've got my bearings. Finally. I know where I'm going. And he's finally just like, screw you, man. Like, just,
Yeah.
And then
it's taken him a lot to lose his faith. That's something that's like, and he's not even quite there yet, which is interesting. You feel like he's finally calling God an asshole, but he's still on his way to that.
He's still a custer.
He's still heading to Dick Rock, you know?
Yeah.
He's still there.
That rock hard Dick Rock.
Which is called the Lost Apostle, which is
the Lost Apostle.
Nice. That doesn't actually exist, right? I don't think it does.
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know anything about a big Dick Rock, a holy Dick Rock, but maybe.
I mean, I feel like I know a lot about Dick Rocks, and that's not one that I know about, so that's why I don't think it exists. But
can we find out if the Lost Apostle is a real Dick Rock or not?
Yes, please. Okay.
Shark bait, ooh-ha-ha.
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 At the beach, also, on the flip side of the world... Should we go to them? Should we go to our buddies, the Saint and Arseface?
Well, we do have them, yeah. We have just a brief little moment with them at the very end of the episode, too, where we see that they have now reached the Gulf. And Eugene's like, well, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
And they're just going to crawl to the other side of the world, apparently.
I like this because I love it when... They set up all these rules for a show, and then they realize, he's also just a magic gunslinger. So can't he just shoot through the world?
He can just do whatever he wants.
And they just appear on the other side, and it's like, yeah, okay. Because otherwise he's just walking. He's going to walk to Australia. And there is a moment where they're like, oh, boy, this is going to take a while. Are we going to see the Saint and Arseface on a plane flying to Australia?
So I how do they get a passport?
Like, yeah. I kind of like this Deus Ex gun.
And I do love, too, that they have somebody who, anybody who would question it, is kind of represented by the man on the beach who's like,
crikey.
Whoa, I didn't even think that was possible. And then it just shot in the head. Like, okay, logic isn't a factor here. Like, don't worry about it. Now, one of the most shocking moments, I think, is Cass's storyline with Frankie.
Yeah.
And the ultimate end of Frankie Toscani being his end.
Right.
Ooh.
Well, we kind of knew what was going to happen as soon as he said, like, this is actually happening, and then it does.
Yeah, when he did flat out say, it's funny that you think that him shoving a gun up his butt and blowing his brains out is funny, because I'm going to shove a gun up your butt and blow your brains out.
Right.
And we see Cass with the seraphim feather that he has used to
pick the lock.
And then as Frankie is rounded the corner, he's killed the guard so quickly they haven't even made a sound. I mean, this just was so hauntingly, like, brilliantly done, the setup. Yeah. But then just the moment of Frankie, just the visual of that side.
And then when it went away. I
mean, we saw Jesse's soul get crapped out of a sphincter hanging from the ceiling, and it didn't upset me as bad as this.
You know what's great is also in that image, an executive producer's name came up in the opening credits. And I kept thinking, like, I hope he has that. I hope he has that, like, image framed somewhere as, like, eh, that's a proud moment.
Hey, it's like, remember they said my name when we said saw it
over
Frankie's
this image
butt?
Of a guy basically sitting on a gun, dead.
And if you want to know if that is how he actually meets his end in the comics, stick around till the end of our show.
Yeah,
Ivan Soto in the chat saying, poor guy, pretty rough, to say the least.
Yeah.
But this is now the impetus for this whole storyline with Cass, and we've seen him with the Seraphim, and we've seen these conversations, and we'll talk about Tulip and her whole scheme. Right. After we talk about kind of Cass and this relationship with this fallen angel that has been his cellmate.
One important point with Cass is that he's someone who, we've always known this, he's someone who is racked with guilt and is always punishing himself.
Mm-hmm.
And is constantly in a cycle of self-destruction, which we've been seeing in literal form the last couple of episodes as he's been escaping and then back into it. And it just seems like he's always in the cycle. But now that Tulip is involved and Tulip could be hurt, they want to break out of that.
I do think that is very interesting, yes, is that it's his love. He loves Tulip more than he loves himself, clearly.
Yeah.
Is that he would do anything for her. But we also have this really heart-wrenching conversation where we have the Seraphim even saying, you know, like, oh, you know, you were so excited. You couldn't believe that she could come back for you. And he's like, no, she's not my girlfriend. She's my mate's girlfriend. And forbidden love versus is it really love or is it pigheadedness?
Mm-hmm.
And Cass just saying, look, no, that's just who she is. She just, if you take something of hers, she's going to come back and get it.
Yeah.
Whether it's just it's a friendship thing. This is a platonic thing. This isn't what you're making it out to be.
Well, that's what he's saying, but that's not what he means.
But it's not what he wants it to be.
He's really in love with Tulip, and he's very excited that she's back. But and now that Tulip is in danger, that's actually what's going to get him out of there. Because he realized she's going to keep coming back.
She's going to keep coming back, and Featherstone is just wait. Which I also think it's ironic that her name is Featherstone, and it's the feather that is getting him out of the stone.
Featherstone has become such a badass.
God, Featherstone. I'm like, Hoover's gone. What do you think of Hoover 2?
Hoover 2's terrible.
Hoover 2's
just
meh.
There to be like, you know, he's doing what he's supposed to do.
Yeah, it's like, it's what Featherstone was originally, but now she's progressed as such like a crazy, like, vengeful badass that I'm like, I'm just so into it.
It's so different from the comics. I think I'll say that at least. We'll talk about it more in detail
later.
But they've really adapted the show into something different, and some characters have gone off in these great directions that are very different. It's awesome.
I definitely feel like Featherstone's character is one of the more interesting ones. And ultimately, we do see Cass talking to the Seraphim and saying, look, you know, shut up or I'm going to kill you. You keep talking, shut up, shut up, I'm going to kill you. And then ultimately, Cass breaks his own hands off, and then we see him crawl up and kill. And I love this moment, this, like, psych-out moment, which is, like, it just goes right back to, like, the first season.
Yeah, it just brings... I always forget that, like, these angels can do that.
Yeah, that they just pop back up. Once you kill their body, they just leave that body, and then the new one's there. He's like, you could have just... got me down, man.
I was also wondering, like, and let us know in the chat if you guys were thinking this too, but I felt like they maybe, like, he was going to get superpowers from, like, drinking the blood of an angel.
The angel? I thought something weird
was
going to
happen.
Like,
but
it was,
then it's like, oh no, he's just trying to get, just getting the escape out.
So then he can fly out of there.
Fly out of it.
Fly right
not,
out.
I guess not into the sun. It looked like
it was
light
like,
out.
No, it was nighttime.
Okay.
It looked like nighttime. It was like evening, like overcasty.
Okay. There was some golden light coming in at some point.
But I mean, he could just hide underneath the wings too, I guess. But I don't know. It seemed like it was night. It seemed like it made sense.
Yeah.
But ultimately, Tulip finds out that Cass has escaped, which is good because this whole episode is her putting herself at risk over and over, right, and over and over and over and over and over and over to try to get Cass back. And then ultimately, Marnie, her alter ego, coming face to face with Jesus Christ himself.
Wearing the hair of Tulip from the comics, which I always
love. I love every time that Marnie has, like, Tulip's comic book hair. I was talking about that last week.
In the previous episode, by the way, where she gets stuck in the hospital, in the hospital section, I kept wondering, what if she has a head trauma, why haven't they realized she's wearing a wig?
Yeah, that's what I was like, also, but I think maybe they're like, oh, that's just...
Let's just keep focusing.
Yeah, let's not be rude. That's, you know, that's part of her style, I guess.
But,
I don't know.
But Tulip ends up buddying up with Buddy Christ.
Yeah.
And
which was funny, too, because did you realize that it was Jesus right when...
I knew it because I knew they were faking us out. Because they were setting up the idea of, like, oh, she's going to come face-to-face with Hitler.
Because we saw Hitler. We see the emissary suite.
Yeah, so it's like, it's great that it was the other guy, and it was Jesus.
And I love that Tyson Ritter is just like, and you know how I play Jesus? Myself, but without a shirt. I'm Tyson Ritter. What up?
Check it out.
What up, All American Rejects? I loved All American Rejects.
And they played it in this first season that he appeared. He's doing a great job in the show because he plays Humperdew as well.
Humperdew and all of the Humperdews. So many clones of Humperdew. But I love, too, that we see Featherstone in her confrontation with Jesus when, you know, Tulip is telling Jesus, look, you can't come with me on, this is going to be a jailbreak. This is going to be intense, like, and almost patronizing to Jesus. Like,
I was going to say, like, I would first ask Jesus, like, okay, I know some of your powers, Jesus. I know about the bread and the wine and all and that fish. Stuff. Can you, like, turn guns into birds or something? Like, I want to know, can you do other stuff? Because maybe you'll be useful. You know, can you turn...
Can I use your Jesus powers?
What Jesus powers can be useful in a fight?
Can I use to get my vampire buddy out?
Right, to get my vampire buddy. I would also add, like, he's a vampire, by the way. I don't know if you're cool with that, but he is a very drunk vampire all the time.
I love that Tulip, too, won't even curse in front of Jesus, though. I know. Like, she starts to say shit, and then she's like, stuff. My stuff, like, I don't want, like, ugh. And then even when she's like, you're just a really nice guy, Jesus. Like, she's like, I mean, obviously, but damn, like, you're really nice, Jesus. So it's just really funny to me to see, too, Jesus go down there when she's like, look, there's nothing you can do in this scenario. We can't talk our way out of this. This is going to be a big gunfight. This is going to be violent. This is something that you're not going to be want to be a part of. Mm-hmm. And Jesus is like, we'll see. And then he goes down there and he's like, hey, I'm going to bless the prisoners. And Featherstone's like, no, buddy, no, you're not. No. We hear Cass yelling in the background and we're like, okay, well, obviously. And Featherstone's like, I don't care if you're Jesus or not. I'm Featherstone, so GTFO. Come.
Here's a bloody handprint.
Yeah, and just leave. And then when Jesus just comes back and he's like, it didn't work.
Yeah.
And, like, and Tulip has to go and take it into her own hands.
Usually he's more persistent than that. That's like...
Yeah, I was like, that was... He gave up pretty quick.
If it was tax collectors, he would flip his shit. He would go crazy. But because it wasn't, because it was soldiers, he wasn't able to do it.
He's like, there you go. What are you going
to
do?
Yeah. No tables to overturn. So
but I did think that this was really, really... I mean, that he's even saying, look, like... Don't do this. This is, they're going to kill you. Like, this is a bad idea. And Tulip's like, everything I do is a bad idea, basically. But this is like, you're going to learn real quick, Jesus. This is how I roll. Jesus. This is what I do.
And Jesus is like, I'm rolling with you.
Yeah. And he comes up with these great things about, like, you know, having her look like she's worshiping so that he can get all the other grail to do it. Mm-hmm. And basically deter. And we even see this with Hare Star, like, from the beginning when Hare is recognizing her and she's starting to reach for the gun, and then he diffuses it by being like, when do I get to meet Humperdew?
Right.
When do I get to meet my brother that I know that you guys clearly something's up with
son.
That?
Son.
Oh, my son, my descendant, flesh of my flesh.
Mm-hmm. Which remember that big sex scene with Jesus that we had?
But it's also kind of his brother, too, because it's the Son of God. They're both the Son of God.
Well, it's based off of his kid.
Yeah, it's like the descendant. Yeah, it's like, you know.
So it's more of a clone upon
saying,
a clone.
If you're saying, like, actual titles.
Yeah. It's the grandson of God.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the many, many grandson clone of
it's
that.
It's the tap dancing great, 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 right. great. Great grandson. Anyway.
And I love this, like, the dancing is the real test.
God. That has to happen to that one did. Episode. Yes. And they're like, okay, dance. Just throw the cane. And this, so absurd.
This also has, like, Adolf Hitler with the...
So we do see Hitler playing piano. Mm-hmm. He bribes a guard to go and see Humperdue. And at this point, we don't know if this is the correct Humperdue or not. And if it's not the right Humperdue, if he can't dance,
right.
then Hitler just has now gained just a trump card that he can say, oh, well, you guys don't even have the actual descendant that you're supposed to have. So right. that is a little worrisome. And it also just sets up like a really happy, bouncy beat to then bring back in to the end. So
yeah.
the scoring on this show is just so good. Mm. It's so good. But ultimately, the big takeaway is that Jesus asked Tulip, what's she going to do after this? Now that Cass is gone, and she's saying, I'm going to find Cass, then I'm just going to do whatever the hell I want, and he's going to leave and go with her.
He's going to go, too.
He's bouncing. No packet for Jesus.
Oh, boy. He's not. Yeah, he's not meeting with
he's
the not summit.
Going, yeah, he's like, forget that summit. You just hang out. And so does that mean that Humperdue has to now be...
Humperdue is part of the plan, but it's still supposed to have all, the summit. But Humperdue is very integral.
Hmm.
So says God.
Well, any last thoughts on this episode before we dive into our special segment?
No, I'm just excited about what this show is going to, how this is going to develop, what other things. There's still one big thing from the comic I can't wait to see, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But like... I really like the show. I'm just enjoying watching it.
Sweet. Well, let's talk about it right now. Right now, we are going to talk some comics. Mm. So, if you don't want to hear it, sure, that can be our new...
God's plan.
Yeah, that's...
We need something.
Yeah, it's the pages turning.
It's
flip
a comic
it. Flip
time.
It. We're flipping it and reverse it, man.
It's a comic time. Turn off your set if you don't want it. Comics time.
If you don't want to know what's happening, then don't watch for just a minute. So this episode, kind of the big difference in the comics and here is Frankie's demise.
Yeah.
In the comics, Frankie dies because he has Cass in a pit and he's been shooting Cass full of bullets. Mm-hmm. We talked a few episodes ago about how him cutting off Cass's wiener bits over and over and over again is kind of an allusion to Frankie having his penis cut off in the comics.
Right.
And being a eunuch and being kind of ostracized for that.
Right.
Now, that's kind of allusion to this one. Now, in the comics, though, Jesse is the one who goes and saves Cassidy, mm-hmm. and he uses the word to where Frankie knows, like, okay, I need to be ready to shoot. The very first word he says, but the first word that Jesse says is miss. So Frankie misses, Jesse pushes him into the pit, Frankie breaks his neck, and he just has to lay there kind of comatose right. while Cass drinks his blood and revives him. This one... He gets gun shoved up his butt.
Yeah.
What'd you think of this reiteration of this?
It's good. Like, I don't quite remember Frankie from the comics. He didn't stand out as, like, a big thing. Because I haven't read the comics in a little, since, like, season one.
I just
one
know Eunuchio is such a mean name to call anybody.
Right.
Like, that was his nickname, is because he was a eunuch.
Oh, right, yeah. Now I remember that.
Yeah, right? Also, that's all you have to say. It's like his sister called him Eunuchio, and so he killed his sister's husband.
Right. the big thing with, like, the comics in this that I really love that they found a way to get out of, and you probably talked about this in a previous episode, is the reason Jesse has split up from Tulip is much different, because in the comics it's just like, I don't want to hurt you, little lady, so you gotta stay home. And it's pretty sexist. And in this case, it's, I'm getting called from God. I'm also worried somehow I'm going to hurt you. And so that's why he's leaving, which feels a lot, it's a much stronger character choice.
I agree. And makes, seeing, like, the dream and him, like, physically choking Tulip and this, right. like, really visceral moment of him being like, I'm going to be the reason that you die if I stay right. here.
Right. So he, like, that makes a lot more, like, internal sense for the character. And it also, he's tried to free Cass. Cass doesn't want to get freed by him. So that gives him a reason to leave Cass. And it makes, and Tulip has a reason to save Cass because she has literally nothing else to do. Like, yeah. She doesn't know what to do with her life if she's not, like, pursuing Cass or
crime,
like,
some Custer. Sort of adventure, really.
Yeah, I know, but right now she's just lost. She's lost the love of her life. She's mm-hmm. not sure how to deal with it, and so she's focusing on the next thing. And it makes sense with the character without it weakening her or weakening him, and that's amazing.
I think that the way that they've been able to take these references,
yeah.
and completely circumvent them and turn these things on their head so that you don't know what's going to happen next.
Right.
And we want to hear what you guys think are going to happen next in the comments. So let us know your thoughts. We got to kind of wrap up here before we get to our predictions, but we'll let you guys know what we think in the comments, maybe. And also, we'll definitely let you know what we think next week.
Yeah.
Until then, where can everybody find you?
Oh, you can find me at MrDaveChild on Twitter or DaveChild.com because I'm Dave Child.
Yeah. And I'm Elena Jordan. You can find me on Twitter at Elena Jordan and on Instagram at Elena J. Jordan. And you can find us both back here next week, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're both going to be here next week, so you should be here with us. See you then. Bye.
Bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.